Welcome back to Bullseye on the afternoon on AM 930 WEOL. Andy Bulbarch and Matt Douglas with you. And time now for us to return to the Lorain County First Response Series, a project of Lorain County's Addis Board, supported through Substance Abuse and Mental Health Administration Award SP080284, First Responders Comprehensive Addiction and Recovery Act Cooperative Agreement. September is indeed Recovery Month, and today we're talking about access to recovery, along with some stories of recovery as well. We have with us in the studio Dawn Crow, Site Director of Firelands Behavior Health, and we have Jeffrey Kams, Executive Director of Road to Hope, and we also have Lindsay Boldy here in studio with us. Guys, thank you so much for joining us. How are you?
Good.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hello.
Well, it's great to have you guys here in studio. And Dawn, I want to begin with you. We mentioned September is Recovery Month. And, you know, I think when folks think about drug abuse and the treatment that's involved with it, I think some folks kind of feel like it's a one-size-fit-all system. But that's not necessarily the case, is it?
That's correct. Absolutely. It would be the complete opposite of that. You really want to take a look at an individualized treatment approach. And there's a variety of different things that go into determining the type of treatment, the level of treatment that somebody will desire and that will work for them. There are things such as the type of drug somebody might be using, the length of time that they have been using it. We also take a look at what do they come in with. Such as we call those recovery capitals. So the idea of what kinds of supports and protective factors, we call them, that a person will have available to them. Also, what kinds of issues need to be dealt with in addition to the addiction, which may be a co-occurring type of issue, which may be a mental health concern, or it could also be a chronic physical health concern as well. So the more of those types of things that you need to look at is why you really need an individualized approach. The more assistance you might need, the longer and more intensive the treatment. If you come in with treatment and you have a lot of those supports and skills already with you, then maybe your treatment isn't going to be as long.
And as we talk about treatment and we talk about some issues, where exactly should someone call if they feel like they need to get treatment?
Anyone can look up behavioral health, addiction, counseling, et cetera, 211 or any kind of local guide. But you can also check with your insurance company if you have an insurance provider. And then locally, our Addis Board, which stands for Alcohol Drug Addiction Services Board, they hold contracts with providers, and their job is to provide oversight in the community and meet the needs of the community for planning and then to contract the appropriate services with that. And you can reach them at area code 440-282-9920.
You had referenced insurance just a moment ago. Do people need insurance to get treatment?
They absolutely do not. Some insurances pay for some types of treatment, just like what you're used to with physical medicine. So it depends upon the insurance plan. There is also, as most people have heard in Ohio, expanded Medicaid, and that has really been fundamental in providing a funding source for folks with addictions. And then finally, that Addis Board that I mentioned previously does hold contracts with individuals, Firelands being one, to be able to provide treatment to somebody without any type of insurance.
About how long does it take for one to get into treatment?
Well, that is $1 million question. It really depends upon wait list. It depends on the type of service that you're looking for. Obviously, what we're going to tell folks is the sooner the better. And I would hope that anyone would be able to get in within 1 week of making a phone call.
What are some of the major components of comprehensive drug abuse treatment?
So a few things, just as I indicated earlier about the program needing to be individualized, that is still the case, but there's some overall structure involved, the most important thing is that a treatment program should not only be individualized, but it should be comprehensive as well. And generally speaking, you're looking at early type of treatment, or primary treatment is the term that's used a lot of times. That may involve something like being detoxed in a hospital or residential facility. And that is for some specific drugs that somebody may be using, or alcohol. Folks then move on to groups where they'll get education about addiction as a disease and begin skill development and processing those issues. Along that psychotherapy route, there's also at times medication-assisted treatment. And that is medications just like we use for any physical health issue or mental health issue that will allow people's brain chemistry to stabilize, especially in early recovery. Once you do that type of treatment, then you'll also be looking at individual issues and family issues in order to not only get sober, but be able to have the skill set that you need to stay sober. And then the final piece a lot of times is a lot of folks call that aftercare. And that is, so now that I have some sobriety under my belt and I have some skills, how do I make sure I apply those skills as I have new stresses and strains throughout life? So what we want is people to be able to get healthy and well and sober and be able to stay that way.
Dawn, one more question for you before we turn the conversation over to Jeff here. Does a relapse treatment mean failure necessarily? We mentioned at the beginning of the conversation that drug abuse treatment isn't necessarily a one-size-all-fits type system. So does a relapse mean treatment failure?
Right. That's a very important issue for us in this field, because I think that a lot of times the general public assumes that the success rate for addiction is very low, and a lot of folks will think that a relapse does mean that it's a failure. And what we really know about addiction is that it is a chronic health issue. And we do know in other chronic health issues, things like diabetes, things like blood pressure, things like heart disease, those folks also have relapses too. We just don't call them that. But all a relapse is an opportunity to have a learning situation in order to try to figure out where we might want to tweak either treatment if somebody's in active treatment, or if they are just needing to tweak a lifestyle choice at all. So the important part is to notice that something happened, take a look at what we can do differently, and to implement those types of things. And that's exactly what happens if somebody, say, for example, is on insulin and it's not controlling their blood sugar. Well, then they go back and they get an adjustment of their medications. And we really want to folks to be able to see relapse as nothing more than that, without any judgment attached to it.
We're talking about Recovery Month. September is indeed Recovery Month. Today we're getting into Access Recovery and Stories of Recovery as well. Dawn Crow, Jeffrey Kams, and Lindsay Boley joining us here in studio on Bullseye on the Afternoon. And Jeff, I want to turn the conversation your direction here. What exactly is it that you think prevents people from seeking treatment?
Hi, there's a lot of variables that are involved in that. One of the things, I think the biggest thing, is fear. The individuals are, you know, afraid of the different things that they're going to go through when seeking treatment. One of the other things is finances, like how is it going to be paid for? How are they going to access the treatment? And then the other thing, where do they go? A lot of times they're not sure where to go to get help or to get immediate help. And that's one of the biggest obstacles too, is immediate access. When they do make that decision to finally get help, they need help right now. And I know that we've came a long way in the recent future, but we still have some ways to go to be able to provide immediate access for when the individual wants help, because that window of opportunity is very short. And we need to get them in somewhere to get help when they are ready for it. So,
What kinds of support is available after treatment?
There's a few different support services out there. I know one of in which we provide is recovery housing is a support that they can get after treatment. There's peer support that, and there's some agencies that provide peer support that are a good service for after treatment. And then obviously recovery meetings and the community. There's a lot of support groups out in the community. And over the last, you know, years with all the things that have been going on and the widespread a problem that we're facing, we've seen a lot of different communities get very active with starting support groups, whether it be through churches or, you know, different agencies that have added support groups for this specific thing. So,
about how long does treatment take? I would imagine that some cases are going to be a little bit different along the way there, but typically how long does treatment take?
Well, that's kind of a loaded question. Treatment itself is, you know, however long it takes for an individual to understand and be convinced that they have a substance abuse problem. Recovery in itself is forever, though, and it's a lifelong process. So when you're talking about treatment, it's, like I say, it's kind of a loaded question. There's a lot of variables in that, but the number one thing is, you know, them getting involved in treatment and understanding and getting educated on what's wrong with them and what they need to do to move forward in their life. So,
what part does a 12-step or some kind of similar recovery program play in this drug addiction treatment?
Well, that kind of goes back to what I was just talking about in the last thing question, where treatment focuses on education and education of what that problem is and gives them the immediate help and the immediate education on what's happening. And then after treatment, that's where the 12-step programs and the recovery programs come into play. And that they focus on building support networks for the individual so that they have a support network to fall back onto. And they start working on some behavioral changes that, you know, need to take place and lifestyle changes. And they focus more, the recovery groups focus more on long-term recovery.
And I would imagine a big part of that happens with recovery housing. What kinds of details can you share about recovery housing and the role that it plays in this whole process?
Well, recovery housing is, yes, that's my area of expertise, I guess you would say. And recovery housing is housing for individuals that are recovering that provides a quality, safe, stable living environment. How recovery housing fits into the continuum of care is that it plays an instrumental part in providing a safe and stable living environment for people in recovery during and after treatment and well into their recovery. It ensures that the individuals, they will have a low-cost, stable living environment, which helps to move them into an atmosphere and attitude conducive for long-term recovery. There are recovery housing is designed to play an active participation role in the resident's journey in their recovery. So they are actively participating 24 hours a day in the resident's, in the individual's recovery process. And, you know, you can assure that these are being done by verifying that recovery houses that you're going to are, you know, certified or associates of, you know, recovery housing standards. There are a lot of places out there that, you know, people claim to be sober living houses. There's a difference between recovery housing and a sober living house. And, you know, I know one of the obstacles that we've had to overcome is not wanting to be allowed in certain neighborhoods or neighborhoods that are concerned about having recovery houses in their area. And that is came about, I believe, that whole stigma is because of places that are not recovery housing programs. They're sober houses where there may not be a lot of oversight. There may not be administrative oversight. There may not be, you know, staffing involved. They're just a house where the expectation of that house is the individuals doing the right things in their life. And, you know, so recovery housing plays a much more structured role in the recovery process, and they work together with the treatment agencies and the individuals, all the people that are involved in that individual's recovery. They work together and collaborate together to make sure that we can all play a part in the success of their recovery.
Very good stuff. Well, Lindsay, it's your turn. We've heard from Don, we've heard from Jeff, and you know, a big part of what we're doing here today are talking about the stories of recovery as well, and that's certainly where you come in, Lindsay. So give us an idea as to when you first entered treatment and, you know, what recovery looks like for you today.
Okay, well, I entered treatment. I went to The Key in Lorain. It's a residential treatment center for women. I went there on September 21st of 2017, and I did a 60-day program there in inpatient, and I learned a lot. I got sober there, and I learned a lot from the counselors that I had.
Well, what kind of struggles did you go through during your addiction?
Well, I had hit rock bottom. I basically lost everything. I lost my family. I was estranged from my children. I was homeless. My health was deteriorating. It got very bad. It was a very, very dark place.
Well, and obviously, certainly a lot of obstacles to overcome along the way there. But if you had a message of hope for those that are still struggling right now, what would that message be?
Don't give up. This disease is killing people every day, and I'm so happy to have found the help that I have, but there's so many resources out there. Reach out, talk to somebody.
Well, and if you felt like you had one or two really impactful resources that really helped you out specifically in your recovery, what do you think those most impactful resources were?
Well, the first resource that I got linked up with back last September was the Recovery Court program. I joined Recovery Court on September 13th. And so now I'm coming up on a year in the program, and they have helped me tremendously. If I ever had a question on where to go or what to do, they gave me the right direction. I have a whole team of people working for me to help support me and guide me. And they helped me get into my treatment center, and they helped me to get into sober living. So I'm in a sober living house for women now. That's called Primary Purpose, and I've been there for approximately 9 months. But I've got great support in place, and it really is all thanks to them.
Very good. Guys, we've certainly covered a heck of a lot of ground today, and we've learned a lot more about Access Recovery. And, you know, Lindsay, that was a wonderful story there about the stories of recovery, too. So we certainly appreciate you guys coming in studio. Don, Jeff, Lindsay, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
All righty. Again, Don Crow, Jeffrey Kams, and Lindsay Boley here, shedding some light here on Access Recovery and stories of recovery as well. September is indeed Recovery Month, and again, it's all part of our Lorain County's First Response Series, a project of the Lorain County Addis Board, supported through Substance Abuse and Mental Health Administration Award SP080284, First Responders Comprehensive Addiction and Recovery Act Cooperative Agreement. We need to take a break here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. We'll come back with more here in just a moment on AM 930 WEOL.